Well, I had concerns about the organization from the beginning, because any program that seduces people to abandon their lives to serve their agenda rather than empowering your pre-existing life, there's something off about that. Mm-hmm. So I watched her get sucked in and join what they call the coaching path. But I didn't want to interfere as a mom. You know, you don't want to criticize your children. And but then at the end of April this year, and she'd been in for 6 years already, I got a call from somebody who had defected, and she said, "You have to save your daughter." And I said, "Well, I want to be respectful of her choices as an adult, and I thought she'd wake up one day and come out of her own volition." And she said, "I don't think so. I think she's been in too long. Do you know what's going on?" And then she told me about the secret group within the organization called DOS, Dominus Over Serve, or something like some Latin term, meaning dominant over slave, and that my daughter was involved in this kind of slave master situation, and that apparently they were all having sex with Keith, and that they were supposed to recruit other young women to be slaves as their assignments, and they were giving out assignments to have sex with him. And then I found out that she could be branded with his initials, and I lost my mind. I mean, there went the cool parent of tolerating what my child, I mean, she's over 18, but I was like, this is very, very dangerous.
Of course.
And then the more I learned, because defectors came and told me about their experiences, the more concerned I became. And I realized that I did an intervention with her at the end of May, and I failed.
People know what Nexium is. Have you heard about this cult that, okay, a lot of people don't, which I'm surprised, because there was a documentary and now you have your documentary, which I think is really insightful. But explain what Nexium is to people if they don't know.
Well, Nexium proposed themselves as a self-help organization when really it was a criminal organization masking as personal growth.
And Nexium was the umbrella company.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of little companies underneath that umbrella, and executive success programs was the one that we were introduced to.
Right, EESP, which yes. I had heard about ESP. A lot of people were doing that, and I had no idea that it started with ESP. So yes. That's how you first got involved, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right, so you take her because you're both interested in spiritual growth.
Actually, a trusted friend kept calling me and saying, this program is going to change your life, and she was incredibly insistent. And what we didn't realize in retrospect, she was recruiting us.
From someone you trusted,
yes.
And you thought, well, it's... And when you start listening to it, it was like, oh, well, some of that stuff makes sense. It starts really slow.
Yeah.
And then you stopped going, right?
I was a student. I was taking classes. She got sucked in more. She became a coach. I wasn't interested. And then at one point, I was handed an article basically alleging that he was a pedophile. And that was the moment that I was like, okay, I'm out of here. And I told her, but by that time, India's response was
that I was only having good experiences so
right.
far, so I didn't have anything to base it off of. Like, these people had become my friends, and I trusted them, and they were kind of my authority figures at that point. I mean, I was 19 years old, looking for direction and structure, and I thought that this program was going to give me that.
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. This is Jim Clemente, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer of CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Laura Richards, criminal behavioral analyst, former New Scotland Yard, and law reformer and campaigner for coercive control law and stalking law.
And today we have two very special guests.
Hi, I'm Cecilia Peck. I'm the executive producer, showrunner, and director of the Starz series Seduced, Inside the Nexium Cult.
I'm Inbal Lesnar, Cecilia's producing partner and also the lead editor of the same series.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're really excited to have you.
Thanks for having us. And it's especially interesting to us to talk about these issues of coercive control. And Laura, you've been working in this area and on legislation, and we're just excited to approach it from that angle.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so happy to speak to you both. I can't tell you, having finished your series last night and shouted at the screen so many times, well, at a certain person, And then I was absolutely astounded by Catherine Oxenberg mentioning coercive control and many other people talking about coercive control. But my goodness, what a situation, what a set of circumstances, what a perpetrator, what a docuseries. My goodness, it really is just an incredible piece of work of you bringing so many voices of women to the screen. And I just want to thank you for doing that, for giving them all a safe space and place to tell their stories. I think it's an incredible docuseries that everyone should see. So please, listeners, please watch it. It's on Stars, and there's four parts to it, and it is absolutely beautifully shot. And I know the cinematographer, and so does Jim, Arlene Mel.
Yes, yeah.
She's amazing. She brought so much to it. Everybody who worked on the show had just incredible passion and dedication, and it was an intense, complicated story to tell. We love Arlene. She has her other interesting doc out right now, Paris Hilton's film that goes in a direction you never expect it to. But anyway, she was incredible to work with.
Yeah, and I think females being behind the camera and telling stories like this, for me, that's a really important part, that oftentimes we get men telling women's stories or shooting women's stories, and you can see that you all work together collaboratively. So I just want to congratulate you all on it. And also ask, can you take us back to the beginning? When did you, Cecilia and Imbo, I know you've worked together on other things, but how did this come to light? And can you just tell us about that process and then a little bit about how you put it together?
Well, yes, we can tell you how it came about. It was pretty unusual. We had a former colleague who worked on our previous film, Brave Miss World, who in 2013 and 14 started sending me a series of very persistent emails and texts inviting me to a women's group and to different gatherings. And she said she was part of something that had changed her life. It would change mine. I had to do it. She started to mention her friend Allison Mack. She said it offered mentorship in the industry. Then she moved to Albany and she said, "You've got to come here. It'll turn your life around." So it became to the point of being quite annoying. And I finally said, "I don't know what it is, but I'm glad for you. But I'm working, I'm busy, and I don't understand what it is and don't have time for it." And then in late 2017, I got a text from her saying, "I'm very sorry. I was in a cult and I didn't know it. And I was being forced to recruit you. And can I apologize? And can we talk?"
Oh,
so
wow.
That's how we found out about NXIVM. And she didn't end up being part of the project, but she did introduce us to some of the other incredibly brave former members who did come forward on camera. And through these initial conversations with her and with the women who are in the film, we realized that there was a very, very interesting issue to explore, which was how did NXIVM manage to take away or erode these very intelligent, educated women's understanding of how to protect themselves? How could they have gotten in so deeply that they started to act against their own best interests? So that was our motive in pursuing the story.
That's really powerful and scary that somebody that you were close to actually tried to drag you into it. And so glad that you were busy, because you might have, you know, tried to, you know, just out of friendship support her. And you might have been targeted. But I think one of the themes that I picked out of this, and I think you just alluded to it there, how did these women, these very intelligent women, get dragged into this? What I saw as an overriding theme and a very insidious, methodical strategy was one man using women to target, lure, and exploit other women. And he couldn't have done it on his own. He couldn't have done it without conscripting these women to help him. It seemed like an entire bait and switch. It was all about women and empowerment and their ability to go forward. But in fact, what it was the guy behind them who was pretending to be this wonderful person, taking advantage of every one of those women.
Well, these predators will often have a circle of enablers who are women bringing in other women to get them to do what the cult leader ultimately wants. I mean, whether it's Epstein or Weinstein or R. Kelly, they're always women around in the inner circle who are, you know, enslaving other younger women. And yeah, I mean, with me, I think I was just, I was too old or too wise. I wasn't in that, you know, if I had been younger, maybe just got to Los Angeles and was looking for a community or mentorship, I think I easily could have gone to one of those meetings. They seemed so legitimate. They were held in elegant homes. They were full of celebrities. They touted the prominent people who had taken the courses, everybody from Richard Branson to the Bronfman sisters. The Dalai Lama had traveled to the U.S. to address their group. So it looked very legitimate. You know, that's why our series is called Seduced. It was a seduction from the moment you walked through those doors.
Certainly a seduction, certainly brainwashing, mind control. But the skilled abuser will always make the abuse invisible, invisible to everybody. And that's the challenge with something like this, isn't it? That you can be slowly drawn in, because on the basis that you want to do the self-work, that is the strength and the weakness that you're trying to self-improve. And I think this individual learned throughout his whole life course how to get better and better and better at it. And I'm so glad that you didn't go and attend a meeting, Cecilia. I've been to many of events like that where you're looking to, you know, form networks and help each other. And women, because we live in the patriarchy, we're brought up in the patriarchy, we have to build our networks. And I think anybody who is a man who is saying that he's leading the feminist movement is a red flag for me immediately. You know, it's an oxymoron. Men can be leaders working with us, but it's for women to lead the feminist movement. And that was my immediate red flag, this man setting himself up to, although originally he was saying he wasn't involved in DOS, but of course it was very clear that he was. So can you just take us back again? You received persistent emails. She said that she had realized what was going on. Then what was the next step? You spoke to Imbal. You decided, you know, where did you decide together the next steps and what you were going to do?
She decided to step away for her various personal reasons. I think she was afraid of retaliation and she wasn't ready to come out publicly. You know, for everybody we spoke with, it's still very difficult, even if they were on the periphery of this organization, to admit that they were somehow a part and contributed to an organization that is now labeled as a sex cult. So even if you had no direct relationship to the most insidious crimes at the heart of this organization in Albany, you still are somehow associated with it. You most likely tried to recruit your friends and family because there was a huge pressure to recruit other people you knew and bring them in, and to now, you know, turn around and say, oh, remember that thing I tried to get you to take a class? That's actually been exposed as a sex cult and I was part of it. So anyway, she stepped away, but she did introduce Cecilia to other young women, and Cecilia started developing relationships with them and filmed some footage with them. And that's when she really brought me in and said, can we, you know, I mainly work as an editor, and she said, can we put something together? Can you think with me on how to present this to, you know, a potential network or distributor? And we put together a presentation reel, a sizzle reel, and used some of the little news footage that was available at the time. There was something done by the CBC and a little bit of news. This was towards the end of 2018. So the trial hasn't happened, but he's already been arrested. And there was some material that we could include in this reel. And our partners, executive producers, Alexandra Milchen and Daniel Voll, helped us get a meeting at Stars. And we slowly went up the ranks until we got a meeting with Chris Albrecht, who was the head of Stars at that point. And with that last green light meeting, he said, I want by the end of this series to understand how me or my daughters could be a part of this. Mm. I want this to not be some far-fetched true crime thing that never happens. I want to understand how they capture these people. I think he saw the parallels to groups, to other programs like Landmark and other, you know, self-help groups. And he really wanted us to help viewers understand the psychology behind it. And so we felt we were on the same page, and they invested in us continuing to develop and produce this.
It's funny that you mentioned Landmark, because Landmark had offices in our building where our offices are. And I've talked to people, you know, they've tried to recruit me in a number of times because I walk by there every day. And a couple of my friends actually took courses there. And then I would get a series of these, oh, you know, you're being invited, you get an extra discount because your friend's here and that kind of stuff. Have you heard anything like that about Landmark? Is there also similar nefarious things going on behind that?
My understanding is that there's also an enormous amount of pressure to take the next course and to make a further financial commitment. And you're doing so well. And if you really want a breakthrough that will enable you to achieve your dreams, you need to do this course next. Mm-hmm. So, but I haven't heard that there's a predator, you know, mm-hmm. at the center of it. It's an MLM, I think, like Nexium was run so that everybody is trying to work their way up to a position where they can make money, and that incentivizes staying in the group and spending more money on classes while you're in the group.
Because I will say that right at the beginning, I think you did such a great job of laying out what I would call the marketing manipulation. We'll give you the tools that you need, you can do. That's an empowering line, right? And then when you start to do the work, and then they said, we are connected to the Dalai Lama. Connected to what? There's no substance to that, you know? And by touting the celebrities like Branson and others, that people think, oh, well, they must be legitimate. But then they hit you with the $3,000 per person for 5 days. And then they give you the limited time offer and the special reduced price, right? Oh, I'm going to miss this. Oh, this is an opportunity. I have to take it. So these are all marketing manipulations. And
very common.
Anything that requires that to get you in, like you said, Laura, a complete red flag. If it was actually this incredible group with higher goals, they want to raise civilization, they want nonviolence throughout the world, an ethical community, that's the kind of people they draw in.
They didn't hide that they were a business. They didn't hide. In fact, on their mission statement, they explained why this was a costly, expensive program. They had an explanation for this. They said, our goal is to target the most influential people in society, and then there'll be some kind of trickle-down effect. So in order to influence change, we'll go after people who have the money and resources, and those are going to move this forward. But they were not shy about the cost of the program or about this being a business. What people didn't know is that they really did not make a lot of money, and that they were really financed by a couple of billionaires.
Right.
So I was 19 when I joined Nexium, and I was 24, nearly 25, when I was invited and recruited for DOS. So that's kind of that is the grooming period that I was unaware of that was happening to me while I was there. And that took a long time. So sometimes when people say, well, how did this happen? Like, that's so ridiculous. Did she just say yes right away? Absolutely not. That's not how it happens. It's a slow drip of indoctrination and grooming that allows for these types of things to happen.
You know, the setup with any skilled abuser is as important to set the foundation. And
when I overlaid every episode across, and I love the way you revealed things step by step, by the way, and the animation of being able to show things in a way that we wouldn't normally see it. And I think that was very powerful. You did a beautiful job of that. But taking us through step by step of the setup, I overlaid it against Biderman's chart of coercion. Now, Biderman was a psychologist who assessed and interviewed prisoners of war to see how they were mind controlled by their captors. And this ticks every box. And of course it does, because it's coercion and coercive control. But the setup is the trust of bringing people in and the trust of confidence. And then you get the isolation. And you saw that beautifully portrayed between the separation of family members like India and Catherine. You know, they immediately move them apart. Mm-hmm. And it's under the guise that this is good for you. This is the best thing for you. Then they monopolize perception. Step by step, the isolation, the echo chamber, then the debility and exhaustion, these ready challenges and the lack of food, the starvation, the not being allowed to sleep, the 3 a.m. exercises. You know, it's classic stuff with the abusers, those people being omnipresent. The sense that you're always being watched, but then you self-regulate. You become the person who regulates without being told what to do. And the text messages, good morning, master. It's a gradual process, this setup of the eight things that happen, the threats if you don't achieve the rule or the regulation that's set, the fear of the consequence, the dread that comes with it. And Biderman talks about 7 and 8 being reward and punishment. And you saw reward and punishment continuously across India's journey that kept her in was the rewards of more and more classes. I'm improving, but I'm not getting the money. You know, she wasn't getting financially rewarded, but her journey was about self-improvement, as it was with many of them. But then the degradation, and that degradation was just so clear. I always add in as well that there are compliance checkers across time. And the scene that stood out to me the most, I'll share this with you, was the kissing scene where the women were all lined up and they had to kiss him one by one. Oh my goodness, I just oohed at the screen that he interlinked hands in an intimate way, but made them kiss him on the lips one by one. He was testing compliance. And you could see some people were very uncomfortable, but the pressure of the room made them do it. You know, made them feel that they should, and they didn't want to stand out because they're testing themselves in their outside their comfort zone. But that kissing scene, to me, he understood compliance check, not you, not you, not you, but you. And that told me he was a very skilled abuser, that he's been doing this for many, many years before Nexium began. I don't know how you feel about that, Jim. You reacted to the kissing scene that stood out to me. It's not the biggest things, it's the little things that pushes someone out of their, they call it their comfort zone, but I call it boundary pushing, boundary testing, and riding roughshod over people's boundaries, huge warning flags.
We have one former member speak up about that in the series, Naomi, who felt uncomfortable with it, but she talks about how when everyone else is doing it and not having an issue with it, it makes you feel like there's something wrong with you. What's my issue? And they would point the finger at her and say, you need to work on that. You're blocked or you're resisting. You have to look at why. And they would always turn it back on you. And then when that escalated later into, in the women's group, Jeunesse, when the teachings would begin to normalize rape and say, there are no victims. You're not a victim unless you see yourself that way, which obviously totally denies ongoing healing or trauma. But Naomi, who had grown up in the Children of God and experienced abuse as a child, again, understood it did not go over well with her. She knew what it was to be a victim. There are victims. So she's our spokesperson in the story for that very difficult situation where you're trying to speak up and there are red flags and your instincts are going off, but you're immediately silenced and sent to do work on yourself or do one of their EM exercises.
Right. But you mentioned Jeunesse, and in that, Nancy Salzman, she presents it as solutions for women. but it's pure misogyny. And she just very subtly says, well, men think and women feel. Men think and women feel. What? So women can't think? Well, are you right away? She's preventing you from using your brain. She doesn't want you to. No, that's not appropriate. Even though she touts it as this major empowering organization for women, she immediately leaks out that we don't want to hear from you. You're allowed to feel, and we will control those feelings, but you can't think for yourself.
But Jim, this is a one line in a sea of psychobabble. Of course. So it comes, you know, in the middle of a long lecture where you have perhaps hypnotized or asleep or a long...
And she's a hypnotist too, by the way.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, some kind of networking women lunch event and you don't think much of it. She laughs it off. But enough of those little, what I call truisms or these little things that they inject in there and they slowly... make you question your own judgment, your own definition of words, your own definition of terms.
Right. Redefining terms, that's so important. It basically undermines your foundation. All of the structural support that you have for you and your life and who you are as a person, all of that is undermined when you change the definitions of terms. All of the cults have done this. All of them set out sort of a glossary of terms from the most outrageous ones to the most subtle and insidious ones. But I was really shocked as the series went on at how blatantly they would talk about these very heinous concepts about, you know, about rape and about child sexual victimization.
I mean, that's also Inbal's editing genius, is how to distill those concepts and find the moments that will tell the story. And it was, you know, I guess probably our biggest challenge was condensing the story into four episodes that would be compelling and dramatic and emotional and really explain this process of coercive control. So that line you mentioned of Nancy's was a gem that Inbal found, and she did it over and over again, just selecting the moments mm-hmm. that could help us tell this incredibly complex story.
And another very important line is having to call the offender Vanguard. I mean, Vanguard, where did he come up with that line, right? I mean, Vanguard is, it's a group of people leading the way to a new development or the advancing force in an army or navy. Like, why did he choose that term? What about it? It was to give him some kind of power, some kind of elevation above everyone. And, you know, really at some point, I mean, towards the end, when India actually saw him in the courtroom and said, he's such a small man. How did I ever think of him as great? How did I ever attach power to this guy? Our perceptions are very easily manipulated. And by withholding him and then, oh my God, he's here. Oh my God, you get to have this opportunity. Oh my God, you know, and then getting that closeness and familiarity from him, you think you're very special. And it's all that marketing manipulation.
And the love bombing.
So what I was told was that he was working on me. And this working on me was kind of like sexual body work. And it was supposed to be the thing that was going to make me feel closer to him and less vulnerable in my life as a whole. That's the way it was pitched. And I wanted to believe that. I wanted to believe that whatever he was doing to me, which typically felt very weird and uncomfortable, was good for me. I didn't want to see it as sexual abuse. I didn't want to see it as me being violated. And so I chose to see it how they positioned it, which was that this was a positive thing that was going to be healing for me. And I mean, I know it's, I feel some shame and embarrassment about that, but I have to also have forgiveness for myself in wanting to see something as good. And I think a lot of people do. And I think a lot of women that experience these types of abuses or manipulation do strange things in their minds to be okay with it. And abuse does strange things to your mind and your psyche and your ability to see yourself and the world properly.
The gaslighting, the compliments, the feeling of being special and picked out, this man who's been put on a pedestal. I mean, everything about him is power over. The whole organization was power over, patriarchy, misogyny, and how ironic it's all tied up in the bow of female empowerment when it's the exact opposite of that. It made me understand that he was so skilled that he probably would have been doing this from a very, very young age, of understanding women and our likes and our dislikes and our needs, to be able to groom so well. And my belief is girls and women are groomed from birth, and we're groomed from birth to be polite, look self inwardly, first of all, before we look outwardly. And we're groomed in every message, every socialization experience that we have, to be polite, to be subordinate, to see men as superior. And yet here you've got him tapping into all those key things. It was a master class in how you mass groom and indoctrinate, but each person felt they had a very special relationship. So it was like a domestic violence situation because of this special relationship that they felt they had with him.
We really wanted to tell a story about the human mind. Are we vulnerable? What makes us vulnerable? How can you reform someone's thoughts? And, you know, we kind of had to sneak it by the network, who was pretty excited about having a saucy, you know, series about a sex cult. So I'm not sure they quite knew what they were getting. But fortunately, we had India and these other women who were willing to take us along in their process of trying to understand what had happened to their brains. How did they change me? How did I come to accept things that I never would have wanted? So they became our guides through this story.
I was going to say, along the same lines, imagine how difficult it was for them today, knowing what they know, to sit and tell us how they admired him, how they enjoyed the classes, how they were trying to bring other people in. This time warp, asking them to go back and retell their stories as if they're relieving them. That was a really difficult ask. And we knew we can be sensitive. We had women in all key positions on the production from, you know, once Chris Albrecht left Starz, we had two female executives. We had two of us as showrunners. We had, we filled the production both in field and in post with as many women and sensitive male allies as we could. But we still needed to provide a network of support and psychological support for everybody who agreed to come on camera. And I have to say that we talked to a lot of people who would not come on camera and just helped us with research and context and background and led us to other people. But those brave ones who agreed, who said, this is important, more important than my temporary discomfort in explaining things to my family or myself, I have the opportunity here to tell a story that's important, that could help educate others. And so we established a fund to help support them and offer them counseling services before, during, and after filming, and then later through the release of the series. That was also very triggering. So we felt like that was important, to support somebody on that level. And that's something you don't see on true crime when in television. Necessarily, it's not the common practice. And so we do hope that some of the things we learned on this series in how to treat victims of crime and how to respectfully allow them to share their stories in a truly empowering way, and not just for the salacious enjoyment of television subscribers, will be, you know, taken, at least people will take note of it.
Yeah, and that means not only offering therapy, but on the set, when it's somebody who's speaking about trauma, you can't shoot them and say, okay, next setup, or can you move a little? You're not in the light. Everybody was trained in how to be sensitive. After a take, you need to communicate and say, that was so moving. Thank you so much. How are you doing? Are you feeling okay? Do you need a break? A hug? A cup of tea? You know, you can't treat it like it's entertainment. Even when you're on a tight schedule, you've got to move really fast, but you have to create that safe space, especially when you're asking those difficult questions and holding people accountable. I mean, India had to talk about things she wasn't proud of at all that were very traumatic and triggering to her. I mean, she even had suicidal feelings during the process while bringing all this stuff up, but she really wanted to be honest and share these things so that other people would understand, would not feel ashamed if they've been in a high control group, and would know how to recognize the red flags.
Yeah. And I think the same with Catherine. Catherine Oxenberg had to speak about a lot of very difficult things, and boy, what a tremendous spirit she had, and the love that carried her through for her daughter and caring for her daughter. I was just really impressed with her and how much she did and how relentless she was, despite the fact that, you know, there were a lot of obstacles.
It really is a mother-daughter story of these two fighting for each other and refinding each other, and that cult pried them apart. I mean, they were so alienated. It wasn't certain that they would get each other back. You know, that indoctrination goes so deep. So today they're together, they're happy. Managed to heal.
They were not in that place a year ago when we started filming with them. This was really a process. And I think the more India understood and was able to unpack what had happened to her, that helped her get closer with her mother.
So Cecilia and Imbal, my goodness, it's been incredible talking to you both. We've learned so much more. And we always know it's a challenge that what you film, what you shoot, what you document, and what you put on the screen are quite two different things. And there's so much more material, the court scenes, things that you can tell us about that we want to ask you about. So thank you so much for joining us on Real Crime Profile. We want to get you back to ask you more questions, but thank you for giving the women such a safe place and space to share their stories. It's clear to me that you really understood trauma, and I really want to thank you for that. And so for now, this is Real Crime Profile signing out.
If you like deeper analysis like this episode on topics like Making a Murderer, Mindhunter, Escape at Dannemora,
the case of Sally Challen, the teacher's pet, Lynette Dawson, the Exonerated Five and When They See Us, and the disappearance of Madeleine McCann, you can listen to RCP on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever platform you listen to us on. And please be sure, if you like what we do, to give us a 5-star review.
Thank you for listening to Real Crime Profile.
Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineering by Mike Thal. Music is composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203-866-4107, or you can go to the website where there's a lot of information and advice that you can follow on www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic abuse, you can call the National Domestic Violence Helpline for free on 0800 200 0247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, shelter or counselling, you can call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, on 214-946-4357. You can also go to their website for further advice or support, www.genesisshelter.org. And there's the domestic violence hotline on 800-799-7233.